You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, August 12th, 2009. This is episode 92, Wall to Wall Listener Feedback. It's time again for another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. We're all the way up to episode 92. Sally, good morning.
Hey, Martin, I bet we need to start thinking about something special for episode 100.
Yeah, we've got 8 weeks to figure that out. We kind of upped the total quickly over the summer, adding an additional show. So we're quickly approaching 100. I can hardly believe that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like we've talked 92 times now, but I guess we have. And if you look back at our archives, we have the history to prove it.
Yeah, and our little talk this morning is a little bit different, something I don't think we've done in 92 shows, and that's just have an entire show devoted to listener feedback.
Yeah, this is my kind of show because this is where we get to learn all kinds of cool stuff from our listeners. And that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to share that, you know, across the listening audience to other members of our Synod and beyond, so that everybody can benefit from the great ideas that are floating around out there.
And for once, we're letting our listeners do all the work. We just get to talk about it. That's the part I like. Although there is quite a bit of research involved with any of these kinds of shows, but especially when we have this much listener feedback, we try and take a look at everything that our listeners are recommending or suggesting. There's articles, there's applications, there's websites, all kinds of stuff. And we came to the realization last week that if we try to pump in all of the listener feedback we had from now almost a couple weeks, plus our conversation, I think we had Gail on last week, and so on and so forth, we would have, you know, the show would have been like an hour and a half. So our listeners are probably thanking us for not doing that tonight.
Yeah. Set a new record. I was going to say, Martin, that, you know, going to conferences and just different opportunities where you kind of get bombarded with a lot of really cool information, it could get overwhelming. So I was going to maybe start the show with a little bit of a challenge for our listeners to, you know, try to take away one or two things. Now, you know, not everything's going to be for everyone, but if you just try one thing from the show, that might be a good way to kind of tackle it. And we'll certainly have all the links and everything provided over on the show notes page. So just surf over there once you're done listening and check out your favorite links.
Absolutely. As I was just looking through all of the feedback that we're going to talk about today, we've got it from every sector, I think, of the Synod. We've got pastors, we have teachers, we have webmasters in congregations, we have people just getting started in technology, those that have been in it for a long time. Just a real cross-section of all of our listeners, which is really fun to see.
That's right. That's what I love about our community. And we certainly all benefit from taking the time and investing to share with one another in this way.
So I'm assuming these are in no particular order. Is that right?
That's right. Okay. Kind of called in the accounting firm to randomize the comments.
That's right. So where are we going to start here, Sally?
Well, first up on the list is our Facebook fan page, which is really exciting. We topped 100 fans on our Facebook fan page.
Yeah.
So we have a vanity URL, which means instead of being facebook.com/ and then a million different characters and numbers and all kinds of combinations of things, we have facebook.com/WellsTech. Makes it really simple for people to find the Wells Tech fan page, and we've had some comments there. First up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal, who's at Faith in Fond du Lac. And I love what Ryan wrote. I called it a home run because he wrote that he used Jing, which is a screencast product, to do training videos for his teachers explaining how to use their new blogs. So as his teachers progress through the school year, if they, you know, have questions, they can go right back to that training video that Ryan recorded for them. Makes it really awesome for documentation purposes. And he thought they were very cool. He also forwarded the Google Google Calendar BWTG episode to their athletic director, who was wishing to have a way to get all the local schools to post their athletic events. So there's a great application there for collaborative calendaring, and hopefully the Google Calendar, you know, can help them out in that situation.
And we've heard your real positive feedback from others on Jing in general, because it could be a real time saver rather than laboriously working through, you know, step by steps or screenshots or whatever. Just talk through what you're doing, what you're seeing on screen. It's all for free. Remember, it has a time limit of 5 minutes. Is that right?
That's correct.
So you've got a limit of 5 minutes, but probably that's a good attention span time frame to use. I think there's many, many, many uses for this kind of technology, real time saver.
Absolutely. And the last comment that Ryan shared there was that he had sent the photo editing episode to his pastor, who's in charge of their webpage. Mm-hmm. Because of all the pictures he'd been getting lately, being able to use Picnic or some similar right. online photo editing tool is a great way to deal with all that. So
well, we had fun doing BWTG. We'll have to look at that for next summer, because there's no shortage of topics that we could have covered. We just had to pick the things that we felt were sweet spots for our listening audience. But that would, I'm sure it'll be an entirely different set next year.
Yeah, who knows what the future holds.
Yep.
Also over on the Facebook fan page, we heard from Perry Lund, who's at Grace at Oskaloosa, Iowa. You know, when we started doing the Wells Tech podcast, I couldn't say Oskaloosa, Iowa, but I can
now. It just rolls off the tongue.
That's right. Happy to hear from Perry. He's a techie guy out there, and he had listened again to one of our BWTG episodes on emptying your inbox, kind of the getting things done mentality. And I guess maybe we didn't provide a lot of resources in that show that were Mac-centric, mm-hmm. so Perry filled that gap for us, and we'll have a link in our show notes to 5 amazing Mac applications for getting things done. And so that'll help our Mac listeners.
And we're very thankful for our Mac listeners. And we know there are some, in fact, more and more, as we see the national statistics growing of Mac usage. I think it's always been heavily used within our educational setting, so it's no surprise that we've got Mac users. So we'll have to be a little more sensitive to that. And I really enjoyed the post and the article that he provided here, because there is just a ton of GTD stuff on the Mac at this point. And we've talked about a few of these before, but all of these look awesome. I've used IGTD in the past. It works really well in the Mac environment. But some of these other ones I had not heard of. There's just a whole list of things available. And even at the end of that article, there's stuff for non-Mac users that I was not aware of. So very informative article from Zen Habits, which I was not familiar with either. But I think I'm going to subscribe to that feed and follow the GTD stuff there.
Very good. We also had a comment on our show notes page about emptying your inbox, and this one was from Kevin Smith. I enjoyed his comments, and maybe you have some thoughts on this too, Martin. He said, I have a question about getting an empty inbox when using a BlackBerry. Martin recommends only checking your email 4 times a day. I can see the productivity improvement from that practice. But what about all those people with BlackBerry? Mm-hmm. Seems like they're letting the BlackBerry run their lives. I see them walking around BlackBerry in hand like they just can't wait for their next message. Are the messages they receive dictating how they will run their lives? Seems more like mind like carbonated soda water. So interesting, and I'm sure this applies not just to BlackBerry users, but to all those smartphone type users, iPhones and Palm Pre's and Google Androids and all of those, where you know, I think even our president was a BlackBerry addict.
And not the Senate president, the
no,
United
the United States,
States president.
President. There you go. So, absolutely. What do you think about that,
Martin? Absolutely. I think this is ADD at its best in some cases, where you're looking at every device you've got, your laptop, your BlackBerry, your whatever, and it's got to impact productivity, and it is running your life, and that's really the whole point of trying to you know, follow some kind of methodology to manage your tasks and the stuff that you do, and really focus you not so much on what everybody wants you to do, but what you feel and how you've prioritized things that are important for you to do in a given day. And that's typically not your inbox. And BlackBerry users, this is only going to get worse as everybody's getting smartphones, whether they be iPhones, BlackBerries, Palm Pres. You know, we're not going to have the traditional phone in a few years. They'll all be smartphones, and they'll all be email enabled, web enabled, and you'll have the opportunity to fritter away your day, you know, in 101 different ways. So I think Kevin makes a great point. Shout out to Kevin as well. Saw him at Synod Convention. He was a delegate over in Saginaw, Michigan. It's always good to see our listeners. Thanks for stopping by, Kevin. Appreciated the conversation.
And I guess I just wanted to follow up with, you know, in this digital age, we're going to have to develop new methods for dealing with all the things that are coming at us. And that's what GTD is all about. And I think it just takes a certain amount of self-discipline.
Discipline, yeah. And that's the word I was going to use, too.
Yeah, it definitely should be something that you consciously think about and make decisions about how you're going to manage the data that you're confronted with.
Yep. You and your Lord should be running your life, not your accessories, your digirati, as it were. It's got.
Hey, I like that. That's pretty good.
It's got to be something that has a purpose. So, and that's not going to be your BlackBerry. Good comment. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah. Next up, we heard from Pastor Jeremiah Gum. He is at Cross of Christ in Liverpool, New York. And he sent us a link to a page called 21 Things Not to Do with Your Web and or Blog Site. Mm-hmm. And I'm just pulling up that page. It's from Cyber Brethren, a Lutheran blog. And it's kind of done tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I was going to say tongue-in-cheek.
Don't provide
for sure
an RSS feed. You
right.
know, think you can design it better than the templates and, you know, go freeform and crazy with whatever. Use only art, ugly and dark, uninviting designs, you know. So probably some good things that may hit home with a few of our listeners. It may be worth reading through the list.
Yep, absolutely. Good call on that. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. I enjoyed the next comment. And as you were describing, you know, the sources of all of these comments at the beginning of the show, we heard from all different types of people. The next one is from Marilyn Sherrod. And Marilyn had written to us once before. I think we've included one of her comments before because she's just getting started in the closed caption video arena after listening to our show with John Shoesmith on that topic. And just a really neat thing. She's invested in a new computer and she's learning all the different software and everything. And now as she's moving forward with the closed caption videos, additional needs and ideas are coming up for Marilyn and the congregation there at Zion in Torrance, California. And what her question was this time was how best to get audio only off of the video that they're recording for closed caption purposes, because they'd like to post an MP3 version of the sermon, for instance, on their website. And I think that's a really good question. And I guess one of the things that's challenging about it is there's so many different directions you can go with this and so many different softwares that can help you with it. But for us here in Sleepy Eye, we've struggled with that same challenge. We have video recording that we need to do for the local cable channel, which, ironically enough, they're not even using DVD technology. We have to record to VHS for their equipment and everything. So we have that need. We want to broadcast it live over Ustream. We'd like to archive at least audio, maybe even video online. We haven't gotten into the closed captioning, but there's so many different spectrums of this whole audio video production. And I just gave Marilyn some general advice of different ways that you could do that. Maybe recording the audio only on a different channel from your mixer board within your church sound system. Or using internal recording techniques like Audacity or something on your local computer to either record from the digital video after the fact or even during the sermon, that kind of thing. And then, of course, depending on what software you're using, I know different audio video software can allow you to strip off the audio only and create an MP3 file. Mm-hmm. So just lots and lots of different directions you can go with that. And I think certainly a topic that probably a lot of congregations are struggling with in the audio video spectrum.
Yep.
Spectrum.
there's whatever. There's just a lot of stuff there. And boy, to wade through that all, that anybody that's got advice there, I think that we would love those kinds of comments, because I know that's something that a lot of our congregations are going to be considering. So, and it's not an easy thing; it's very complicated. So,
and I guess a link that I'll include there is one to our WellsTech Wiki. We haven't talked about that yet in this show, Martin, but we do have that WellsTech Wiki where we've compiled a lot of information on different audio and video topics specifically. So there's a page on there specifically about audio recording, where we talk about different equipment and software solutions for doing audio recording.
Mm-hmm. Super. Next comment was an email that was sent directly to me from Marin McPeak from Citrus Heights, California. Another thing I love about listener comments is they're from all over the country. We've had New York, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, now California. Actually, Marin was wondering what we had built our new Wells.net website on. If anybody hasn't seen it, you go to beta.wells.net. It was kind of secretly, you know, not secretly, but in a kind of a lower key way, launched for Synod Convention. So all of our Synod Convention content was launched on this beta.wells.net site. So you can kind of see the new design. And Marin was wondering what kind of technology that was running on top of. And we did a whole show talking about Synod Convention technology, but I don't remember if we talked about the content management system. I think we did briefly, but it was running on Drupal. It is running on Drupal, which is an open source CMS. We did a show on open source CMS or content management systems a while back. And Marin was wondering what we were using, and that they were using FinalWeb. Marin is the webmaster at Citrus Heights in California there, at St. Mark Lutheran, and wondering whether that would be something they could potentially consider using, not that they're unhappy with FinalWeb. And I get this question quite often, and what's the difference between some of these, like Joomla, Drupal, or WordPress even, to use as a congregation site versus FinalWeb? And my advice typically is, stick with FinalWeb. For congregation use, it does everything almost everything. In fact, in most cases, it does everything that you need a church or school website to do. Once you get into these open source products like Drupal or Joomla, they get a lot more complicated, and you need a technology person to essentially manage them, keep them updated, develop templates, install modules, those kinds of things. And FinalWeb does all that for you. And so that's essentially my suggestion. But for the Synod's website, we have some more customized needs. That's why we're using a content management system like Drupal.
You know, Martin, I would echo that totally, and I've seen it from both sides of the spectrum, because I do manage my own personal websites using various content management mm-hmm. systems, and I think one of the key words that you said was update. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you have the energy to put into, design templates and all those kind of things on the front end, mm-hmm. boy, those upgrades come at you right and left, and you've got to stay on top of it. And it
for
takes
security
a lot
reasons,
of
especially, yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, and everything you customize has to be re-customized. So yep. It's quite a bit of work to go that route.
Yeah. Thanks for the comment, Marin. You had also suggested that the site looks really good, which we're pleased to hear about. And we're continuing to work at that. And Marin also enjoys the WellsTech podcast, so keep listening.
That's great. Thank you. All right, we're going to dive into Twitter land. We have various #WellsTech tweets to share from some of our listeners who are also Twitterers or mm-hmm. tweeters, or I don't know what you'd call that. But anyway,
you know what you are.
Back, so. Yeah, that's right. Circling back to Ryan Rosenthal, who we heard from on our WellsTech fan page, Ryan's actually been having a bit of a challenge with the #WellsTech tweet process, and he types out his tweets and puts #WellsTech on them, and they don't go out into Twitter. So I don't know if any of our other listeners are having that problem, but he actually kind of direct messaged me, and I asked him to try it outside of TweetDeck, which I think is what he was using for his Twitter client. And even then, occasionally they would come through in the #WellsTech search, but not always. And so just kind of an odd problem. And I guess it kind of points out that this is all new technology and there's probably some bugs out there. Don't know why it's affecting Ryan specifically, but maybe there's others who have had that similar problem and we just aren't realizing that that's going on. We definitely do get Pound Wells Tech tweets from a variety of people.
Oh,
but
for sure, yeah.
Ryan's aren't flowing through for some reason, so I'm not quite sure about that. The one that he did get to flow through said, again, he had shared Jing with a professor at one of the local universities, and she was very excited. So he's really become a Jing advocate, which I like to see. Mm-hmm. TechSmith is an awesome company, and they have some really cool products that make life easy as you're trying to share information, document things, and that kind of thing. So keep trying to tweet us, Ryan. We'll be watching for him.
Okay.
We heard from our tweeting teacher, Jason Schmidt, who's out at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he had several really cool things to share with us. The first one is called Password Bird, and it's an easy password generator. You put in a couple of phrases or dates or whatever, and it mixes those for you and gives you something that would be memorable to you but not easily cracked. And so if you're struggling with coming up with creative passwords that you can remember, maybe you want to check out Password Bird, and we'll have a link in the show notes to that.
That's a great suggestion because there's a bunch of them out there, and they all do kind of the same thing. But I like the way that Password Bird does their has put their web page together. Very easy to follow, and lots of nice features there.
I agree. Jason had some comments following up on our mind mapping for ministry episode, which was episode 88, where we talked about different mind map solutions, and he shared mywebspiration.com, which is another mind mapping tool, and I believe you can get access to it for free. It's an online tool, so if you want to look at that one, that's another option for you. And then he had a link to 50 useful mind mapping tools for college students, a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
And so if 5 or 6 that we've shared on the show aren't enough, there's a list of 50 now.
That was an amazing list. I had no idea that all of those existed. Mind mapping has just exploded, but it's a natural thing to put within a web application like many of these are, or a standalone app. It apparently must not be all that hard to do because there's a ton of them out there, and most of them are all free.
Yeah, and I think it's exploded for a good reason. You know, I think people are seeing more and more that it should be more of a standard office tool that you use in brainstorming type situations. Very, very useful.
You're certainly seeing it more in corporate America as companies like MindJet have large install bases in some Fortune 500 companies. And it's an indispensable tool for us as we plan our shows in it, but even just day-to-day business kinds of things for brainstorming, for meeting notes, for all kinds of organizational things, for presentations, it's a great tool. I think it's a time saver too.
Absolutely. Next up, you shared a link to DIRPY, D-I-R-P-Y. It's actually the full title is DIRPY Studio, and it's in beta. You can find it at DIRPY.com. And basically what you do there is you paste in a YouTube video link, and it produces an audio-only file from that YouTube video. So if you're looking for an MP3 version of the audio of a YouTube video, here's where you can get it from DIRPY.com.
That's cool.
Useful tool.
We've had others ask, how do we just strip out audio from video? And it looks like if you can just post that on YouTube, you've got your MP3 converter right there.
There you go. Next up is a link to soundbible.com, which is a free public domain archive of different sounds that you can use in podcast or video or slideshows, whatever you need audio for. Soundbible.com, and it's all Creative Commons licensed. And I think we've shared in the past some other audio sites that are similar. There's Freesound and SoundSnap. This one looks to be done really well, very professional-looking website. So if you're looking for audio for different purposes, there's a place for you to check out.
I didn't look at this site. That must have slipped through. So what kinds of sounds are we talking about? It's not narration of the text itself. It's what?
More sound effects.
Oh, okay.
So Yeah, and they have them pretty well tagged. They have city sounds and jungle sounds. They have dog sounds. I wonder if I could post a few of those. We have a very active dog that makes a lot of sounds around here. So,
so maybe it's not, it has nothing to do really with the Bible. It's just the sound Bible.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
That, exactly.
Thus my confusion. Okay.
Just their title.
So it's a sound site. Got it.
Moving on, Jason reminded us that Wikispaces is giving away free K-12 wikis, so they would have no advertising. They started this, actually, I think back in 2007. Mm-hmm. They announced that they would give away 100,000 free wikis, and now they've upped the ante to 250,000 more free wikis. So if you are considering starting a wiki for your classroom, possibly in the coming school year, maybe Wikispaces is the place for you to check out. I know that Gail is a big Wikispaces fan, and she's linked us before to several that she's created. So this might be a good option for you, especially with no advertising. I've used Wet Paint, and that's what we use for our Wells Tech Wiki, but there definitely is advertising there unless you pay for their premium, you know, offerings.
Yeah, we've had Dick Diener on the show in the past, who he is, I believe, a big Wikispaces fan. In fact, he's part of the self-study committee at Kettle Moraine Lutheran. I'm also serving on that committee, and that's what we'll be using to collect content in relation to all the self-study that we'll be doing for Kettle Moraine Lutheran up in Jackson, Wisconsin. So Wikispaces has, or wikis in general, have a lot of uses if you just dig in and kind of be creative about it.
There you go.
Very easy to use.
Last tweet to share from Jason Schmidt is pdftoword.com. And I know in the past, Martin, we've done a show specifically about PDF converters back and forth. But this one allows you to upload a PDF document, and it produces a Word document in the process. So if you're trying to basically unlock or be able to edit a PDF, this is the way to do it. And, you know, we had this challenge just recently because we are trying to go back through our school registration paperwork and finding only PDF versions of some of the documents, and we needed to unlock those. And you know, over time, you get this huge file archive, and sometimes it's just hard to find the right files that you're looking for. And so to have a tool like this to just be able to convert it easily could be real powerful for you.
Yep, absolutely. Good stuff.
So, yeah, thanks, Jason. We always appreciate hearing from you and your sharing those tweets with us. We also heard from Rachel, and she sent us a link to 10 ways to get beyond PowerPoint with classroom projectors. I love this list. It's some really creative things to do with your classroom projector. One that caught my eye was for drama. Hang a sheet of white paper and put the projector behind it and have your children, your students do miniature theatrical productions, you know, in shadow format. And so just lots of different creative uses for your projector that are beyond what you'd normally think of.
I was not familiar with this site before, techlearning.com, which is the article she referenced. This also has some great stuff on it. So if you're interested in technology and where that impacts education, I think this is a great site to take a look at. They have all kinds of different articles about web filtering and eight ways to use school wikis, for instance. There's a recent article here I'm reading, how to use pictures, free podcasts, all kinds of good stuff. So that's techlearning.com. Thanks, Rachel, for pointing us to that site.
I'm just making a note to make sure we draw that out in our show notes as we build those. So we'll have a link in our show notes if you're looking for that.
Yep. Advertising heavy, I'd say, but the content is all there. So
yeah. Next up, we heard from David Schumann. He's at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and he's their webmaster there. And David was checking out their link in Google Earth and realized that they had the little what would you call it, pinpoint or whatever for their congregation at the wrong place in Google Earth. They had incorrect placement. And he kind of ran into a roadblock because he couldn't find how to contact Google and have them correct it. And he emailed me to see if I knew of any way to get in touch with Google. And I sent him about 10 different links. And finally, the last one was the one that he needed. So we did find a contact us Google Earth help page, and it may be worth our listeners going out and checking out their Google Earth listing and then following up on it like David did if it's incorrect, and we'll post a link for that in the show notes.
Especially in rural areas, sometimes the lats and the longitudes get a little bit wonky when they're trying to map to addresses. I know even here in, let's say, Menominee Falls in the Milwaukee area, where they have the real funky addresses, for fire service and those kinds of things, the N's and the W's and so on and so forth, those give Google Earth some problems at times too. So it's where, yeah, it is definitely worth checking out.
So is wonky a technical term? Oh,
sure.
Okay.
You never heard wonky before.
Well, I have now. Okay. I add it to my vocabulary, and I'm big
Dictionary.com. I'm sure it's got to be in there.
There you go. I'm big into this Bananagrams game now. It's kind of like individual Scrabble. It is way fun. Uh-huh. So I'm going to be spelling wonky in my Bananagrams games.
Okay, you go on. I'm going to look up Dictionary.com. And see
okay, you go
there.
For that. I am now going to talk about Wells Tech Listserv, which has been kind of a happening place lately. There's been some conversations there about service planning, using a shared relational type database. You know, somebody's looking for a way to have the organist come in and put in, be able to check for the hymns for that week, or put in the organist schedule and the readings and all the different things that go into worship planning, being able to do that in a shared collaborative type database. And there were different suggestions made on a local basis. You certainly could use a Microsoft Access type product. I think there's an Open Office database product as well, but that's going to be more local, not web-based or shared. On the web-based side, you certainly could develop some custom type applications. I had the idea after our forms show, which was our most recent BWTG episode, that you possibly could build a collaborative Google site using different docs and spreadsheets and forms in combination to do the same kind of thing.
Yep.
So kind of a lot of different directions you can go. I can't point to a particular application that's just going to solve all the problems. It's probably going to take some development no matter what way you go.
Yep. Wonky on dictionary.com. It's here. It's British slang. Shaky, groggy, or unsteady. Unreliable, not trustworthy. So I think I even used it in the proper context. So
well, there you
believe
go.
It or not.
And the spelling on that, so I get it
correct. W-O-N-K-Y.
That's what I thought about that. I learned something new today. Very
All
good.
Right.
That's my takeaway from the show.
what do you call that little something extra?
That's Langyap.
Langyap. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. All right. One more plug for the Wells Tech Listserv, and if you aren't subscribed to it, I recommend that you get subscribed because it's a great way to ask questions and, be emailed to the community and that kind of thing. And we heard from Josh Shanick, who's over at Kettle Moraine Lutheran High School, and they are getting rid of 150, I believe, computer monitors. So if you have a need for an older type CRT monitor, 15-inch to 21-inch in size, some of them are black, some of them are gray. They have them available through the end of this week, and then they're going to have them taken away by a recycling company. So if you need a computer monitor, get in touch with KML, and I think they've got enough for you to have plenty.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yep.
That's becoming more and more an issue as our technology ages and we're looking to get rid of it. You don't want to just throw it in the trash can. That's obviously not environmentally friendly. But disposing of it properly through some of these services can be costly as well. So if there is reuse or the ability to find a new home for it, that's the absolute best way to redistribute the older technology for maybe somebody who would enjoy using it.
There you go. All right. Next up, I heard from my buddy Brent Nimmers. He is a member of a congregation where we were formerly members, Atonement in Plano, Texas. And he sent us a link to flagcounter.com, which is upping the ante on the old counters that used to be a part of the websites where you could tell how many visitors you had in total. Now you can tell which countries they come from, and it actually displays the country's flag with the counts of the site visitors. Mm-hmm. And they actually have one of these on the Atonement homepage, so if you want to check that out, we'll have a link to the Atonement website in our show notes as well.
Kind of a cool concept. In general, I recommend congregations and schools not use page counters or hit counters, because they do one of two things, at least in my mind. If the numbers are low, it suggests that nobody's going to visit your site, so the visitor that comes there would wonder, you know, why they're there. Or two, if the numbers are so high, you look a little bit pretentious, saying, well, look at everybody that's come to our site. But this is a little bit different take, especially if you have an international audience, because this is, you know, this kind of distributes the load as far as where people are coming from. So kind of cool.
Yep, I'm looking at the Atonement site, and they've had visitors from Sweden and Great Britain and Ireland. And so it's interesting to see where they're coming from.
Very cool.
All right. Next up, we are going to point to the LinkedIn in the Wells group. And LinkedIn, if you're not familiar with it, is another social network. This one more business-oriented, so making those business connections, recommending coworkers or people that you've worked with in the past, that kind of thing. And it has a whole group factor, so people can organize around different interests and commonalities. And on that site, there is a Wells group. It's called In the Wells. I think we actually had a show dedicated to that in the past where we interviewed someone from that group. Mm-hmm. But there has been some conversation out on the discussion boards over time. And most recently, there was links related to the Synod Convention. So people wondering if others were watching Synod Convention and what their take on it was. And then another link from Daniel Hughes, who is at, and I don't know what the congregation is exactly. Their website is lambstolions.com. And they are using all different types of social media to communicate with their congregation and their school families. Mm-hmm. And so basically they have seen it be a big help to them in their school renovation fundraising project and just a higher level of church attendance through the campaigns and things that they've done via the web. And I see it is, I believe, St. Mark's in Watertown that's doing this.
I think that's right. The person that we had talked to about the whole site was Andy Thimer a while back.
That's right.
He and I both co-moderate In the Wells group on LinkedIn. So if any of our listeners are in LinkedIn and want to join, just submit a request. Everybody's approved, so we kind of moderate the discussion. Not the discussion, but the membership. The discussion's really wide open. And a good way to connect, especially those people that LinkedIn is kind of more business-focused as opposed to Facebook, which I would call more social, more recreational. Social networking. LinkedIn was really designed for business professionals, and there are some good business conversations going on there and different seminars that are advertised, and I think a valuable location for Wells business people.
Very good. Our last comment, tying up our community feedback for today, was one we just received.
I didn't have my drum roll queued up.
There you go. but we just got this. Our Monday episode was online forms. That was our last bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode. And we heard from David Savatsky, who gives kudos to WooFoo, which is one of the online form creation that we linked to in that show. He says WooFoo comes highly recommended by other services as well. I've heard testament to ease of use and integration with your pre-existing setup. Mm-hmm. More customization than Google Docs too. So there's David's 2 cents worth on online forms, and maybe you want to check out WooFoo.com. It's WUFOO.com.
Once again, thanks to all of our listeners. We had a wide-ranging set of takes and comments and suggestions and questions. We love all of those. There are many ways to get involved, and this is a conversation, not just me and Sally talking, but we'd love to have your voice here too. And the easiest way to get connected to us and to the show is on the show notes website, which is wellstech.wells.net. You can always send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. If you're a Twitterer, pound Wells Tech is a way that you will get our attention. There's all kinds of other, if you go to the show notes website, all kinds of other ways to contact us. There's a voicemail line. There's our Facebook link. Listservs. Boy, if you want, there's no barrier to entry here. If you want to talk, we have a channel for you.
There you go. Open ears.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Shall we continue?
Yes, I think we have a new segment to introduce, Mark.
Kind of. We've rebranded our new technology showcase. We had, I think we had some challenges always coming up with relevant new technology, and we're going to change that segment to call it News in Tech. And that will allow for, again, new technology showcase kinds of things, but also some interesting things that are in the news that might be of interest or might have some ministry impact. And there were a couple stories this week that I wanted to highlight. One of them was in relation to our president, not Senate president again, but our U.S. president, Barack Obama. We talked a little bit about GTD. Perry Lund talked about GTD on the Mac. There was an article in Slate magazine about President Obama using GTD. Very interesting read, as I'm a GTD fan. Talked about some of his approaches to using this kind of methodology for getting things done in the Oval Office. So it's a good read. Slate magazine is a little bit left-leaning, so take that into account as you read the article. But anybody that's a GTD fan or anybody interested in productivity, it's kind of an interesting read about how President Obama is trying to get as much done as possible. And he's many have called him the first president who has embraced technology, and I guess I would agree with that. And I think that's a positive thing. There's some positive influences going on there in the technology sector, regardless of many of the other policies that are good or bad, depending on your perspective. But GTD in the News by Slate magazine.
I guess we could say if he can have mine like water, given the things that he needs to juggle, that speaks pretty well of GTD.
Yep, exactly. There is some critical. There are a couple critical thoughts in there about maybe him not delegating or delegating too much and not paying attention to things that are of great interest to the country. So give it a read.
Yeah. Next up in the news was an announcement, I believe, yesterday that FriendFeed has been purchased by Facebook.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about both of these, and obviously we're on Facebook. I'm on FriendFeed. I don't know if you are, Sally, or not.
I haven't gone there, no.
FriendFeed is basically a social networking aggregator, so you can bring all of your presences or your profiles into one location, and then whenever you post, let's say a tweet or something on Facebook or LinkedIn or MySpace or whatever it is, they can all be aggregated into your friend feed. So you just send your people that are interested in following what you have to say to FriendFeed, and they can kind of see all of the things that maybe you post on Flickr or you blog about and so on and so forth. And I think Facebook saw FriendFeed as a viable offering and maybe even a competitor in some spaces. So they just decided, well, we're going to buy them. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. And we'll post a link to all the articles that talk a little bit about maybe why this is a good thing. So definitely I think it's a good thing for Facebook if they can incorporate some of the technologies and the approaches and the frameworks that are available within FriendFeed.
Yeah, I really got a kick out of the FriendFeed blog where they wrote about this on August 10th, and they said, as Mom explained to me, when two companies love each other very much, they form a structured investment vehicle. So, thought that was pretty funny. So it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds with these two working together.
So that's our News in Tech segment. Hopefully that will be of benefit to you. Up next, a feature that we've had since, I believe, show one, and that is our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick?
And I have one for the teachers in the audience, although there might be plenty of techies out there that would enjoy this. We'll see. Mm-hmm. This one is a way to create an avatar. It's kind of a trip around the block to get it done all the way. But this is what I've done with my kids, and I'm seeing just some real positive feedback on it. And that is a website where you can create, they call it a Minimizer. They can't use the word Lego in their title because it's not a Lego product. But basically, you create an avatar that looks like a little Lego guy. And you can control all parts of this, you know, what each individual arm looks like or is holding, what the face looks like, what the shirt has written on it, all these different things. But the ultimate result is your own custom Lego guy. And just a lot of fun. The kids are really, really attracted to this. I had it going in our computer lab. Last night was actually our back to school registration night. And the kids all went in and created Lego people, and they were real excited about it. In our summer computer camp, I actually took it a step further. They took print screens of it. They pasted that image into an image editor, and where they could do cropping and other customizations, different sizes of it, that kind of thing. I actually had them using Picnic to do that image editing. So there was a whole lesson around online image editing and that kind of thing. And ultimately, they ended up with an avatar. And as we're moving into wikis for our classroom, avatars are a big deal because that's part of it. The kids want to have an image there mm-hmm. to represent themselves with. And this is a really safe way for them to be creative.
I was
and
just thinking of that,
reveal.
Yeah. Rather than having their actual photo.
Exactly.
Yeah, a caricature or something that represents them is a great idea.
Mm-hmm. So fun website. We're going to add it on our Wacky Wonderful Websites, which is kind of our safe website corner of our school website. So the kids will be able to go and play with it as much as they want during the school year, during their free time or whatever. But I think we're definitely going to tag this as the way to create their avatars for the wiki this school year.
Very cool. I like it.
Yeah. I bet you're going to create one, aren't you, Martin?
I would love, not really.
Okay.
My son is, though, so this might be of great interest to him, although maybe that's not too cool for a 19-year-old going on 20 here at the end of the
yeah.
month. But who's also a show listener, so maybe you'll pick up on this. You and I, before the show, Sally, we're talking about sites to create avatars or caricatures, and you and I have both looked around for some good sites to do that, or service where you could just submit your picture and they'd send you back a cartoon or a caricature of yourself that would serve, you know, could serve as your avatar. And I haven't found one that would be something that I'd want to use. Basically free or low cost. You know, we found some more expensive ones. But if any of our listeners know of sites like that or services like that, that would be awesome. Or maybe even some of our listeners who are good artists who would be willing to take my picture and turn me into some kind of avatar, that would be awesome. You know, I'd be willing to pay a modest fee at least for that. So let us know. We have a good listener base and hopefully got good suggestions out there. You're not an artist, are you, Sally?
No, afraid not.
Okay, okay.
Missed out on those skills. But.
All right, yeah, me either. My pick of the week is a piece of hardware. It's a portable hard drive called the Free Agent Go. It is a hard drive, portable hard drive by Seagate, a longtime hard drive manufacturer. Essentially, it is a hard drive that is connected via USB 2.0 to your computer, whatever computer you happen to be using, and comes in different sizes, 250 to 640 gigabytes at this point. And essentially, I've used it for backup, but I've also used it for primary storage of pictures, of iTunes content, of essentially everything that I own is on one of these. And the first question I had was, well, how secure is this? And the second question is, how durable is it? And I can't speak to the durability, although what I've read, it's very durable. You can put it in a case or whatever, and these drives are getting better and better. On the security side, if you're a Vista or Windows 7 user at this point, you can do what I did, and that's use a little tool called BitLocker. And essentially what that does is it encrypts the entire drive so that it cannot be read without a password. And you can automate the password entry of it through systems that you use all the time, so you don't have to enter a password every time. But if it's stolen or lost and somebody tries to plug it into their laptop or their desktop, they would not be able to read the files. It's I forget what bit encryption it is. It's pretty high. So I'm pretty confident that even if I lost this drive, I would not have my tax return information or those kinds of things, my pictures, etc., available, passwords and so forth, available to anybody who had picked this up off the street. Very impressed with the technology. It seems to be rather fast, very portable, of course. You can take it. I mean, it's the size of, you know, what would be, it's the size of a large cell phone, but a lot thinner. So very impressed with the Free Agent Go portable hard drive.
Very good. And I guess as far as ministry applications, I'm thinking that it's more for people that are on the go. Mm-hmm. And perhaps there are those that do a lot of traveling with different responsibilities within the Senate or whatever.
Or, but, I mean, if you work between an office or school and home, mm-hmm. this is a great way to keep files always at your fingertip. So if you're forced to use a desktop, let's say at work, but you want to have access to those files at home or vice versa, great little utility. They're very cheap right now. I think prices range from, you know, $75 to $125, depending on how big the drive is. And they come in designer colors. So those of you that are all about technology accessories, you can get probably 7 or 8 different colors. So nothing not to like about it so far,
well,
in my opinion.
Well, that's important.
That's right. All right. what do we have to promote this week?
Well, I just wanted to make sure and put one last plug in for our bonus Wells Tech Goodness series. Mm-hmm. We wrapped up summer school this past Monday. Our 8-week series is done, but you can get to that entire series using the BWTG tag on our Wells Tech website. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And basically, that summer of learning is archived there for when you have the need. If you in the future are looking to do online forms or set up e-newsletters or whatever, you can certainly reference back to those. And just like Ryan Rosenthal did, share it with others within your congregation. So I encourage you to take advantage of that. And just one last tweet, one last feedback to wrap up our community feedback show. I heard from Jason Patowski, and he just sent a really nice tweet along. He said, "So sad to see that this is the last BWTG episode for the summer. Thanks for all the hard work you and Martin have done." So thanks very much, Jason, for that feedback, and we certainly enjoyed doing it, didn't we, Martin?
And Sally did most of the hard work. So I cheated on a couple, and
true.
I pulled off some YouTube videos and such, but hopefully it was of some benefit. But Sally is really the brains behind BWTG and Wells Tech in general. So,
thanks, Martin.
Next week, show 93, we're going to be going back to school, and we're going to be interviewing Joe Dufour from Fox Valley Lutheran. He's a teacher there. And talking about technology in the hands of our students as they get prepared to, yes, go back to school. Interesting conversation with Joe, and Sally and I will be talking about some considerations for students as they prepare to get back in the classroom, but also get back in the classroom with the appropriate technology. So I'm looking forward to that show. Let's close the show, as we always do, with the beautiful music of a Wells artist, and this week we'll feature Kevin Lersch. From his album Abide With Me, he's singing a medley of sorts, a neat composition of Children of the Heavenly Father and Jesus Loves Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. are in heaven, such a refuge there was given. Though he